Good morning, happy Monday, Tucson, and welcome to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, as every day, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And along the way, we envision and debate and discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us to that best possible future. I hope you guys had a good weekend. I can't tell if it went too fast or too slow for me. I got some good family time in, some good R&R, but it always feels a little bit too fast. So I hope your weekend was restful and you're ready to get back into it. Thanks for listening to this show as you're getting your first or second cup of coffee. You're probably a few emails in, maybe a work project or two in, or whatever you're doing, whether you have the day off or you have all the days off, more power to you. Whatever you're doing, thank you for tuning in. I'm excited for how this week is going to kick off. I can't think of a better way to do that. Here in hour one, we're going to talk Tucson as we normally do. Every Monday, we take either the first or second hour of the show and just do talking about news and happenings throughout the weekend or into the week here that matter to you and matter to me. And I'm looking forward to kicking off by talking about what was the real deciding factor behind Amazon's HQ2 decision. As many of you know, they were going to New York, I believe it was Queens, I need to double check that. I want to make sure I got that right. But New York broadly was where they were headed. And then that fell through, as was pretty public knowledge over the last couple months. And they decided to move that to Northern Virginia. And so I want to talk about the real deciding factor behind Amazon's HQ2 decision in a second. We'll get into it. But this is their VP of public policy that you'll hear in a video momentarily talking about the variety of data points and criteria that made Northern Virginia such a high quality place. And it's not the reason that you think it is. And I'm looking forward to getting into that. And then in the back half of the hour, 14.7 million workers under 34 years of age faced job displacement by 2030. What does that mean for Tucson? McKinsey, it's a consulting firm, just came out with some national research that looks at the different kind of communities that are going to face different kinds of entry job opportunity challenges. And there's actually, depending on where you are in the country, you will face that challenge in a different way, between automation, entry-level jobs, the job market. And they broke it out in some really cool diagrams. It's really neat how they did that. And I wanted to bring that to you. And both topics I'm going to bring back to Tucson. What does it mean for Tucson? And then hour two, Louis Christensen, curator of Twitter blog The Dirty Tea Company, calls in to talk about family flight in Tucson, Tucson momentum, what's going on in different areas besides downtown. Downtown gets all the press, but what's happening in the city besides downtown and much more. He will be our hour two interview. Well, let's go ahead and get into it. CNBC did a behind-the-scenes interview with the VP of Public Policy, Brian Huseman, Amazon's VP President for Public Policy. It's a 17-minute interview, and I pulled out a few clips that I want to go ahead and listen to. Let's build this out together. What was the real deciding factor behind Amazon's HQ2 decision? Let's go ahead and see if we have that clip starting at second 20, and we'll play that for a few minutes.
Talent, and particularly tech talent, not only for so we could be able to hire a large number of employees right from the very beginning, but it was also a unique opportunity to build a long-term talent pipeline. So going forward, we'd have the employee base to work here at this headquarters.
I mean, you had pretty much, well, you had more than 200 places to choose from and down to 20 finalists. All had good talent pipelines, I take it. What is it about the talent pipeline here that put it over the top?
Well, Virginia and the D.C. Metro, it's an attractive place to live. The partnership that Virginia offered with Virginia Tech University was also a key factor. I think it's a unique opportunity for us as a corporation to work going forward in the future for the curriculum and skills that students are going to need. And Virginia is also a great place to do business. We have over 10,000 employees here already, and we've received a very warm welcome from the state and county.
So what makes it a great place to do business? What is it about the state? What is it about Virginia that makes it a great place for business?
Virginia is very focused on innovation. They want to get innovation right. They want to work with businesses to set policies and to set a framework that will allow you to grow. That's been very clear from our experience here already. It was very clear to us throughout this HQ2 process.
And the nuts and bolts of dealing with the state, clearly that's gone well so far. How did that work, and how have they been in terms of being receptive?
The state has a top-notch economic development office. They were our point of contact from the very beginning of this process. They were very easy to work with, answering our questions. They listened and really heard our needs about talent and infrastructure and education.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's perfect. This is an expensive place. What does the state need to do? If you could wave a magic wand and make this the perfect place, what else would they do?
I think Virginia is pretty near perfect. I think a continued focus on infrastructure development to ensure that as we grow to 25,000 employees over the next 10 years, that we're setting up the infrastructure to handle that. And I think a continued focus on education. Mm-hmm.
So that's the first segment of four. Let me just build a little bit around why I wanted to bring this up, and that is while John heads to that second clip. Thank you, John, for doing this. I think this is going to be interesting. Is the way that we consider how to bring companies and business and jobs to our community in Tucson and around the country is often this practice of throwing the kitchen sink at ABC XYZ company that it deals with incentive packages and subsidies and tax incentives and things like that. And what I watched this whole 17-minute clip last night, and I was fascinated by what I didn't hear. And that's what I want you to be listening for as we go clip to clip to clip, because I think this relates to even some things that Tucson already has going for itself, and also Tucson's practice for how it both grows from within, and then how it also can be a place that is engaging to companies that are looking to relocate. So in that clip, we heard a talent pipeline, right? We heard that there's access to talent, STEM talent specifically, that there's access to a university, that there is an innovative economic development office that has an eye for collaboration, that it's a business-friendly state. What did you not hear? All right, let's go to the second clip and see what Brian Hoosman, Amazon's vice president for public policy, said, put Northern Virginia over the edge in the end for Amazon HQ2.
And at Amazon, when we make decision, we always go through the pros of the decision, and we go through the cons. And so we went through the pros and cons of all the 20 finalist locations before we came out with Virginia.
And what were some of the pros and cons of Virginia?
The pros are access to tech talent. Virginia and the DC Metro is a great place to live. This location in particular has terrific access to transit. So we think our employees are going to have easy access to the work site. And Virginia is a business-friendly location.
Mm-hmm. What are the cons? Let's not get by without that. What were the cons?
Well, the cons is that I think the cons you mentioned is that the D.C. metro area is not a cheap place to live. And so that was definitely a factor in our decision.
And you had three finalists just in the metro area. You had Virginia, you had Maryland, you had the district
yes.
itself. was it, talk about the decision process there, because you would have had access to the same tech talent in any of those three locations. So why Virginia over those other two?
Regional collaboration between those three jurisdictions was a really important decision, and us picking any one of them, including picking Virginia. The joint letter from the two governors and from the mayor about metro funding and about how a selection of any one location is a win for the entire region really hit home with us. Mm-hmm. So we view our decision to pick Virginia as a win for the entire DC metro region.
But why Virginia over DC or Maryland?
Virginia is a very business-friendly location. This location in particular is also very attractive. It's very close to the DC core metro. It's close to National Airport. It's got two metro stations right here. It's got the existing infrastructure and office buildings that had previously had been vacated from some of the base realignment commissions. We were really able to fit into a community here, which made it a very attractive choice.
So that is clip two of this 17-minute interview. Came out midweek last week, a CNBC behind-the-scenes interview with Amazon's vice president for public policy about the things that made Northern Virginia a place that Amazon wanted to go. Now, I wanted to pull out this clip for a different reason. We're talking a little bit this morning about how cities and communities both look to attract and incentivize jobs and businesses from the outside to come in. And I have a commentary that I'm getting to, and I pull this back to Tucson here as we go. How should Tucson be looking at itself in terms of economic development? And if you think you know where I'm going, you probably don't, so hang in there. But this clip that we just played, was about 6 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes past the first clip, right? So the interviewer again asked Amazon's VP of for public policy, you know, what made Northern Virginia the place where you wanted to go, right? Access to tech talent, right? 5 minutes apart. Well, we got access to talent, quality of life, mass transit. It's a business-friendly state. Regional collaboration, right? We'll get to some of the cons in a minute. But what is the one thing that you didn't hear in that clip? This is my question that I'm going to ask between each segment. What are you not hearing Amazon's VP of public policy state as to why Northern Virginia won the bid? Keep that in mind. I'd love to take your calls on that in a few minutes, 790-2040. But I'm driving home to a point, again, as we do a Talking Tucson hour where we talk about news and happenings that matter to Tucson. I want to talk about some of the details that came out last week about what really made Northern Virginia the place that Amazon HQ2 wanted to go. Now, Amazon HQ2 is not the end-all, be-all. It was treated that way. If you've listened to this show before, you know that I try to eye traditional economic development by the math. I think a lot of cities don't do that. And I think when you throw the kitchen sink at XYZ, ABC, company, corporation, business, you're kind of on the knife's edge. You've heard me talk about that. So we're not propping Amazon HQ2 up, but it was almost a two-year process where I think 236 communities, something right around there, 230-plus bid. In fact, one of the articles that I read actually talks about Tucson, right? Of all the 230-some places, they talk about Tucson sending a saguaro to Jeff Bezos and them having to send it off to some kind of wildlife place because they couldn't accept a saguaro. So nice shout out, I don't know, maybe to Tucson. I'm a little mixed on that. But I'm driving here to something. Let's go to the third of four clips. What put Northern Virginia over the edge? Go.
And I guess it really says something when one place, Virginia, comes out at the top of all of that, right? I mean, it says, what does it say?
Well, it says that Virginia is a terrific place to do business. They're very eager. They're willing to partner with companies. They're willing to think long term, and they're willing to think big picture. That's what really stood out about us.
Right. So you hear it again, right? So that clip was about 3 minutes past the one that we just listened to. What was the thing that he said? Northern Virginia, Virginia is a business-friendly state. Let's go to our last clip here in a second. Give John a moment to pull that out. What are you not hearing? What are you not hearing, Brian Huseman, Amazon's VP for Public Policy, say? We got one last clip. Let's go ahead and see what Brian has to say about Northern Virginia.
Is that the proximity not just to the transportation and all of that, but you're also a hop, skip, and a jump from the Pentagon, mm-hmm. and I know that's an important piece of the company's business. Does that, being physically close to whether it's the Pentagon, whether it's the agencies or whatever, I mean, you already obviously have your office here, but does that argue in favor of this? Was that a factor?
Yeah, that really wasn't a factor. Part of the reason why is that Virginia was very clear that they did not want just another federal contracting office here. And in our incentive agreement, they put a provision that you can't get incentives if more than 10% of your jobs mm-hmm. are involved with the government contracting. Mm-hmm. So they really wanted this to be a corporate headquarters and to diversify the economy.
Were they, beyond that, were they tough? I mean, they're not the most generous state with incentives, and you didn't get a huge incentive package from them, all things considered, certainly less than what New York was offering. How tough were they as negotiators?
Well, Virginia is already a business-friendly state. It already has low taxes, so that's definitely a factor in any amount of incentives they can offer. What was really unique about Virginia was how they thought comprehensively about their model, which is transportation, infrastructure, and the educational environment in this area, but also in the state. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was the fourth of four clip. It was every single clip, right? It went back to, you know, Northern Virginia is a business friendly community. That was the one clip, right? That was the one time that Brian Huseman, Amazon's VP of Public Policy, or VP for Public Policy, I guess those words matter, of or for, but anyway, talked about an incentive. And did you hear what I heard as well? The one time they talk about the incentive package, they reference that it was lower than the one that New York City was going to give. It was Long Island City in Queens. I thought it was Queens, and I wanted to double check, and I did. It was Long Island City, Queens. That was the one time they talk about a tax incentive package, was to say that it was less than the one that they got from New York City. So here's kind of what I'm getting to, what I find interesting. And I'm not a throw the baby out with the bathwater guy, but I think about how even cities like Tucson, we feel like we're in often a rat race to get XYZ company or XYZ business, or to play an ABC economic game, that every city, every community, every region is kind of using the same tools out of the toolbox, and so it's an arms race to figure out. You know, where you want to go. It's interesting when you read this article that or some of the articles around Amazon that so many of the 230 communities that reached out to Amazon to say come to our city just offered these ballooned incentive packages and tax packages that really covered up an economy that just was not great. I've been thinking about this for a while. I even talked about it on the show before. I've often referenced back to Mayor Bloomberg's, speaking of New York City, Mayor Bloomberg's a kind of head of economic development. During Mayor Bloomberg's administration, they said no more tax incentives. Right, we're not going to be doing these tax packages. If you want to come to New York, right, you get a financial hub, you get a talent hub. You get some of the best universities in the world. You get connectivity. You get a major U.S. and global city. You have everything you need to come to New York City. We don't have to give you anything else. And it worked. And ever since I heard that interview with Bloomberg's economic development guy, it's gotten me thinking. And those thoughts came back to the surface when I listened to this interview with Brian Huseman, Amazon's VP for public policy. That through this 17-minute interview, it was almost robotic. And not to take away from probably the authenticity of those statements, but it was almost robotic. Every time he was asked what made Northern Virginia a great place to be, it was not the amount of money that was thrown. It was not the tax incentives. It wasn't the subsidies or other packages. It was access to talent. It was being around universities. It was business openness and friendliness at a state and community level. It was regional collaboration. It was mayors and counties and states coming together and saying, we overall support this and will behind it. It was tech talent. It was quality of life issues. It was transit. It was business friendliness, business friendliness, business friendliness. And it just got me it got me thinking that after all that had happened, and even after New York City fell through, the place they went wasn't the place where they got the most money. In fact, it wasn't the place that topped the amount of money and incentives that they were given by New York City. It was a place that checked the boxes from what it already was. That it was a place where the infrastructure was there, where the talent was there, where the university was there, where there was openness. And we're starting to see cities around the country begin to get on board, with this. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, the former mayor of Oklahoma City did an interview and talked about how, I think it was when American Airlines wanted to build a new global headquarters. Eventually, Indianapolis won. I believe it was Indianapolis. And I mean, it was just, you know, cities and communities just, you know, they offer money, they change up infrastructure and transit, they change so many things. And well, then in a few years, American Airlines just took off. I mean, that was a pun that was not intended. They left the community and left Indianapolis just kind of holding the bag. And it's interesting to hear the mayor of Oklahoma City say actually that over the long haul, when the community invested in economic gardening, when they invested in growing the people and enterprises from within, that was a longer term strategy that worked better for them than just throwing the whole kitchen sink at business ABC or XYZ. Now, I want to go on the flip side of the coin and say that this is not a throw the baby out with the bathwater statement, that there is never a place for tax incentives, that there's never a place for those kind of packages or anything like that for businesses or companies, big and small. But again, what I wanted to point out is that at the end of the day, Amazon didn't go to Northern Virginia because of the money. Amazon HQ2 went to Northern Virginia because of what was already there and what was invested in. And so I think about Tucson and I go, you know, well, we have a real potential to have a talent pipeline, to have a globally ranked public university that pumps out talented people, that we have the opportunity to give them their best shot to stay in the community and to be able to stay here. If we're going to work on something, right, you heard the cons about Northern Virginia. What do we say all the time on this show? Infrastructure and affordability, right? The one con about Northern Virginia, it's incredibly expensive to live there. And so when you're developing employee packages as a company, you have to account for the pricing and the cost of living and the affordability in the area. But I think about where Tucson is, and I think Tucson's focus, with this in mind, after all this, looking at what checked the boxes for Amazon HQ2 and what it was and what it wasn't. I think this is a clear view forward for Tucson. I think it's a clear view forward of the boxes that we need to have checked. By the way, not for somebody else, but for ourselves. And this idea that if we get some certain things right, we'll be a great community as is, and we'll also be a great partner for the right business or company that wants to relocate here. By the way, I hope you're getting from me that this is not a sacred cow, right? That this is not that, and I'm using small m here, right? A lot of communities view companies like Amazon coming in as messianic, right? That this is going to be the one thing that saves our community. We're going to throw all our eggs in this basket and it's all going to be okay after this, or this is going to be the one thing that starts all the big things that we've been hoping for. I think this interview with Brian shows that in some regards, it's actually the opposite, that you build to something like this, not build from. And there's all our companies in Amazon HQ2 that have been in Northern Virginia, right? It's not like this was an open, you know, community with mom and pop shops and all of a sudden Amazon went, this will be a great place to be. I mean, there's a lot of steps that have happened along the way. So I don't want to fool myself or anybody else. But I think in Tucson, we work on our talent retention and attraction to some level. We work on our quality of life issues, right? Our job mobility, our career opportunity, our transit, our roads, our business friendliness, our regional collaboration, our collaboration with the university, right? I mean, there's nothing on that list that we don't either already have or have the opportunity to have. But I think if we focus on that and put our heads down and make that happen, then we become a place where some of the businesses and companies and enterprises that, if they make sense for this community, then want to be a partner. It means then that we spend less money up front. It means that we have to do a little bit less to get more. So anyway, I could go on and on. I think the point is made, but I wanted to pull those four clips out and talk about the news that came out last week of what really, besides getting kicked out of New York City, that's not being naive, they were going to be there and then they got kicked out through kind of some public input, if you will, and ended up in Northern Virginia. But in the end, it was Northern Virginia. They chose Northern Virginia on purpose. What was that? Why was that? And so I wanted to pull this out. I wanted to share it, both as I think as an encouragement and then also a push, for a city like Tucson. I think if we make sure that our core values, our core infrastructure, our core essence is figured out, then I think that sets us up for the future. By the way, I think I'm going to talk about this with Louis Christensen, in hour two. Louis is behind the Twitter blog, The Dirty Tea Company, a really lively Twitter feed, Twitter page that talks about things happening in Tucson. And we're going to talk about family flight in Tucson. Family flight in Tucson. It's a real thing. It's happening, and it's hit me square in the face within the last week or two, and it gets back to, we got to make sure the core of what we do is good and build from there rather than trying to get one or two big dominoes to fall and hope that fixes everything after that. What do you think, Tucson? We're going to go to a break. That was a little bit longer segment than even planned. We're going to cut to a break, but you are on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Give me a call, 790-2040, to share your comments and thoughts. When we come back, entry-level jobs are about to change in a big way. How is Tucson poised to weather it? We'll talk about it on the other side. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice with me, your host, Zach Yenser, as we are powering through hour one here on the show, as we usually do on Mondays with our Talking Tucson Hour, where we talk about news and happenings over the weekend and into the week that matter to you and matter to me. I always come in with a few things on my mind, but I want to hear what's on your mind, Tucson. 790-2040 is your live line front door key to that conversation. give me a call. And you know what? If you have a thought and it's just easier to call in and give that thought, but you don't want to go on the air, or you don't want, you don't want to go on and say, my name is X and here's my thought, that's okay. Give John a call at 790-2040. Share your thought with John, and if you want him to type on the screen at me and say, hey, this caller thought this, and just want the thought passed on, I still bring those things up. So whether or not you want to go on the air, or if you just want to call in and give a thought or a point of clarification, why don't you go ahead and do that at 790-2040. And in the first part of the hour, we did a little bit of a dive into a longer video with Amazon's VP for Public Policy, Brian Huseman. It's a 17-minute interview, and I pulled out four clips where basically the interview asked in a couple of different times, a couple of different ways, what made Northern Virginia an end destination for the HQ to search. And I pulled out a few clips because I was really interested that what he didn't say was that, man, we just got a lot of money from the region, that we got this amazing incentive package. No one could beat it. It sets us up for the future. No, time after time after time, Brian repeats and says, access to talent. Access to talent. Virginia is business friendly. Virginia is business friendly. Great economic development office. Universities nearby. Quality of life is great. Transit and infrastructure is pretty good. Regional collaboration is great. Right, time and time and time again. We probably played, well, I don't know what you say, John, 6, 7, 8 minutes of this 17-minute clip, and of that, there was no discussion. The only time incentives were mentioned was when he said that it was less than what they were originally going to get from Long Island City in Queens. And so they actually went with less money to get these regional and community assets that made longer term sense for Amazon. And it just made me think that I think that should really help us think about what we are looking at when we look to, and when we talk about things like jobs and economic development. I really think it starts with quality of life. And we're going to hit on this with my guest in the 11 o'clock hour. But it led me to, and I wanted to order it this way, because my second item here to run by you guys and get your thoughts on something that is really concerning, I think, to many communities, but it's not across the board. It depends on what type of community yours is and where you are at in the country. But McKinsey Global Institute, it's a consulting firm, published research here this month that basically shares that as a growing share of industries embrace automation, some 14.7 million workers under 34 years old will face job displacement by 2030. Many of the positions that have historically served as a first entry into the working world, jobs in retail and food service, are especially vulnerable, potentially depriving young people from gaining essential soft skills derived from such entry-level work. And so I dug into, and not as much as I would have liked, because it's quite a bit. If you look at what they call the executive brief, it's 28 pages. If you look at the full report, it's 121 pages. And I'm not that sadistic to spend my to spend my weekend reading that much. I will get to it. I will get to it eventually. But what this research does, and why I wanted to talk about it in a little bit more detail, is that this research breaks the U.S., I thought you'd be interested in this, into 13 distinct community archetypes. 13 distinct community archetypes. And those range from, as you might imagine, megacities to rural outliers. And then right in the middle is college-centric towns. And they actually rank Tucson, they actually put Tucson, no surprise, as one of those 13 distinct community archetypes as a college-centric town. as a college-centric town, and those are what they call niche cities, right? They're not, they don't label them as like urban core of like mega cities like New York or high growth hubs like Austin. They put us in kind of the category of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, South Bend, Indiana, Provo, Utah, Prescott, Arizona, those kind of what they call maybe silver cities, right? Older communities, college-centric towns, or just plain small powerhouses. What's interesting is, first of all, kind of how we rank with the average. The average household income per thousand in these college-centric towns is about $55,000, right? Which in our metropolitan statistical area, right? Our MSA, it's not just city limits, but not quite the full county, but our metropolitan area is about 50,000 in Tucson, right? So in that sense, we may actually be closer to the average of a college-centric town than we imagine. Between 2012 and 2017, GDP growth was about 1.9%. Employment growth in those 5 years was 1.7%. Right, I say this a lot on the show, is I'm learning with you, right? This is stuff that will come across my feed. I'll dive into a rabbit hole that I'm very happy to dive into and come back out with something a little interesting. Right now, Tucson's employment growth is about 1.7 to 1.9%, which is lagging the state, which is lagging, it's lagging Phoenix, which is lagging the state, which is lagging and also lags some areas nationally. But college-centric towns have that kind of employment growth over the last almost decade. We're not that far off. But what's interesting is that college-centric towns also tend to see a higher than other type of communities poverty rates. So about 20% poverty rate in college-centric towns. In terms of industry, college towns rank pretty well. About 38% of their GDP is in high-growth industries. About 24% of those communities have a population of over 55%, and 43% have a population with a bachelor's degree or higher. These kind of niche cities, this research kind of proposes, attract workers and companies with a low cost of living and a high quality of life, where a major research university dominates the local economy. And it talks about really how there's a hollowing out of middle wage jobs in the past two decades. In 2017, only 41% of middle wage jobs were middle wage jobs. When we talk about what are the things that long term make Tucson an area where we have not just jobs and not just job growth, but career mobility, right? The opportunity to grow vertically. In other words, you start entry level, there's opportunities to grow mid-level and senior level, or there's opportunities to grow horizontally, which may mean in and out of different industries, and what it means to be competitive over the long term, we have to be thinking that way. How do we move Tucson from being a place that is just kind of entry level service and retail, right? As that sector becomes more automated, how are we either creating education or apprenticeship models that help entry-level job workers survive this mass automation through 2030? And/or how do we make sure that our community has mid-level and senior-level jobs. By the way, there was some recent research done within the city of what will make Tucson a place where those entry-level, mid-level career workers can stay and thrive. And they mentioned a lot of the things that, oddly enough, Amazon HQ2 said or thought was important, and that was transit, infrastructure, quality of life, job mobility, education, I think to an extent housing affordability, and then also Tucson's brand and narrative. So maybe this is a little bit of connecting the dots too. When I look at what when I look at that video of Amazon HQ2, when I look at what's going to happen in our communities by 2030, our opportunity to retain and attract STEM talent looks to be incredibly important. And the ability to have the education in place that will help our entry-level workers transition as their jobs are transitioning is just going to become even more important. Let's pause there. I've got a few more thoughts on that before we close. Give me a call. 790-2040 is your live line call-in opportunity to weigh in on the conversation. When we come back, we'll wrap up and then head quickly. This hour is wrapping up so fast. Head quickly to my 1 hour interview. I'm looking forward to it with Louis Christensen, who will be with us to talk Tucson. It's what we're doing on Mondays. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the show here on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. 790-2040 is your opportunity to weigh in as we are talking Tucson, really both hours of the show. This first hour has been with me as we kicked off, and it was kind of an intro conversation to Amazon HQ2, really interesting interview with their VP for public policy. I didn't hold the interview this time, but maybe someday. But about what really drew them to where they ended up, the Northern Virginia location for their new headquarters. And basically, if you're just joining us, we pulled out a really interesting thing that they were not, they seen at least in there, and what they were saying in this interview, that they were most drawn to Northern Virginia because of its kind of intrinsic assets. That's not a term they use. That's how I'm trying to phrase it. In other words, it wasn't the money that was being thrown at them. It wasn't the incentive package. It wasn't the subsidies or the tax breaks or anything like that. In fact, they actually took less money than they were offered by Long Island City in Queens. They were drawn to the area because of its access to talent, its quality of life, transit, business-friendly community, regional collaboration, kind of you name it. All the things that we actually talk a lot about in Tucson were things that they mentioned were most important to them. And then that led us into a conversation about how across the country, entry-level jobs and entry-level workers are expected, depending on where you are at in the country, we got into that, it actually varies, that up to 14, almost 15 million workers under 34 years old face job displacement by 2030. And what does that mean for Tucson? And we talked about Tucson's need to really make sure that we are retaining and attracting talent, not just for today, but for the future, as our service and retail industries begin to be phased out with oncoming automation. It's going to be those communities where there's a high quality of higher level education, those areas that are STEM focused, that are kind of stepping into that fourth industrial revolution, if you will, not to go all buzzwordy on this conversation, that are going to be able to manage the change well. I think what is encouraging is that Tucson by 2030 will see between a 10-15% job growth from where it is now. And I think a part of that is relying and collaborating with our public university here, the University of Arizona. Go ahead and give me a call, 790-2040, if you'd like to talk about that more. But this research that just came out by McKinsey really talks about how local economies have been on diverging paths for a while, and they talk about how niche cities like ours, college-centered cities, are really developing economic clusters around tech and other industries, and are seeing high rates of net migration. Now, numbers can be a little bit tricky. I'm still doing my due diligence on the research, but it's pretty public knowledge that since the recession, Tucson has lost an incredible amount of younger professionals. Let's just say those 21 to 45. But what makes that interesting is that other communities, and I would also say peer communities, communities like Kansas City, and if you disagree with me on definition of peer, not that I'm really fleshing that out, that makes for a really good conversation. Call me, 790-2040. My point being that I'm not saying, you know, that Dallas-Fort Worth or Atlanta, Georgia or Boston are peer cities. I'm saying kind of Midwest, Sun Belt, smaller scale communities that you wouldn't look to and go, that's a Silicon Valley. You know, communities that have had to kind of grow from within are actually seeing higher rates of engagement and higher rates of migration for young professionals. So I think that's something that we need to be tracking. Basically, automation will not, we talk about this a lot on the show, will not be felt evenly across places or occupational categories. And we're seeing Americans in lower growth areas are not necessarily migrating to high growth areas. This will be my last point, that we're not seeing, you know, we would assume that if you are not making the wage that you want in a community, or you're not having the lifestyle that you're looking for, or you are in a lower growth area, that you would leave to go to a high growth area. And we're just not seeing that over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I think one of the big concerns that a lot of people who look at cities and communities around the country are seeing is that a lot of workers are stuck in place. That we don't just see this influx or inflow or outflow the way that we think that we might, that we really have to be responsible as cities, as communities, as regions, for not to go cliche, but for raising the tide. That doesn't happen on its own or organically necessarily. That has to be an intentional effort. So I will go ahead and post this research for anyone who's interested. One last thought: they also map the largest occupational categories in the U.S. economy that have the highest potential displacement rate. And food service is high up there. Production work is high up there. Customer service and sales is actually up there quite a bit. Mechanical installation and repair and builders, as well as office support. And so I look at, so for example, food service has almost a 40% estimated displacement rate. So I think those are the things where Tucson's an interesting place because it is so tied to the university, which is really a STEM research institution. We have all those pieces. This is what I find interesting. This is my closing thought, is that we have those niche city pieces to be successful. And I'm air quoting, right? Because that's a loaded word. We have those opportunities. We have a great university. We have great STEM research. We have kind of a science and technology opportunity. But with all that, we are so food service dominant. We're so production work dominant. We're so kind of builder dominant. We're so office support dominant. And those are areas where workers without college degrees are very much focused in around the country. And so we have all of the opportunity in Tucson to weather automation and displacement as a community, but our community as it is today is not built for that. I think that's the dichotomy that I'm noticing, is that for all that we are as a potential kind of STEM, fourth industrial revolution, kind of new technology economy community, we're still reliant on the retail and service jobs that are going to be the most easily displaced. That affects our young people, and almost 15 million of those jobs around the country will likely be displaced, and are at least at minimum have to be retrained by 2030. So this all connects. Our first part of the hour talking about Amazon HQ2, and then talking about how 15 million entry-level jobs may be automated away by 2030. Both, I think, provide some thoughts and a path forward for Tucson. And that's my personal Talking Tucson Hour. Hope you enjoyed it. When we come back, Louis Christensen will join me for another hour of Talking Tucson. He is the curator of the Dirty Tea Company Twitter blog. You'll see him at 11. Come on right back.